Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is the interview with Professor Han Yusan, on June 11th, 1981, and this is the fourth tape. Talking about...
You offend people when you are straightforward to say what really should be said. Mm-hmm. I know one of my friend, Arthur Coombs, mm-hmm. Dean first and later president of Occidental College. One time under USC, we have the Institute of World Affairs mm-hmm. at Riverside, mm-hmm. the Mission Inn. Three papers, one by Johns Hopkins mm-hmm. man, one by Arthur Coombs. Mm-hmm. He was at the time, I think, dean and the professor of economics. And the other one, I forgot what, must be a Mr. Mitchell or someone from Johns Hopkins. And they scheduled it right. Johns Hopkins first. I put in the middle because my lecture was of vocational studies, a means of international goodwill. But in the midst, in the middle of it, the first one finished. Before that finished, Arthur came and whispered, "You said, let me follow the thought, and you be the last." After the first lecture, already people began to look at this, and some are yawning. And then when Arthur Coombs, he had 22 pages, single space, 50 minutes or more. Some went to sleep, I saw. Mm-hmm. And then the trustee or strong supporters of USC, mm-hmm. those old dowagers, look at this, and there, this way, I saw that.
With the
watch.
And
so see this, and one look at him. Yeah, he should be sensitive. Then when he finished, then Dr. Van Kleinsmith was chairman. "Now, Mr. Hyatt, with your paper, we are getting a little late." I said, "Yes, sir, I know." I said, "Now, may I ask you all stand up and swing around a little bit?" Oh, they say, oh, they look applaud, and they did. They sat up. I said, "Now, I know what goes on in your mind. You say, Mr. Han, how many pages do you have?" I said, "I have 12 pages, single, a double space. But also, I'm going to cut a few paragraphs. And also, I have a key to close on time. Within 18 or 20 minutes, I'll close." And they again applauded that. I said, "I promise you this." I said, "In the Feng Xiang's army, and after a social meeting, the general asked the colonel to lead in prayer. He didn't know how to end the prayer. Finally, he clicked his heels and he said, 'May I report to the general, I have finished.'" So I said, "When I see the time, no matter where I am rumbling around, I report to the chairman, finished." So I just lectured on this. Then Dr. Van Kleinsmith thought I mispronounced a Chinese word. And his face, I didn't see it. Earl Cranston was sitting down below from the regiment. He said, "I know Yusan is going to pull a story, make everybody laugh, forget the time." Mm-hmm. I said, an English bishop was asked to speak to a high school assembly of girls. He said, he rushed into the assembly. He said, "Now, good morning, girls. Today I'm not going to give you a long and heavy lecture. I want just give you one advice. I want each one of you to get yourself a hubby. A hubby is someone you can, something you can live with. You can develop social ideals. And a hubby will create international goodwill. You like your hubby so much, you want everybody else get a hubby." Mm-hmm. I said, "This evening I'm going to share with you my hobby. Oh, that's all. Then I couldn't get after the meeting. I closed 18 minutes. And so all the Dodgers got together, say, have cocktail at the a place. Oh, stayed until almost midnight.
Yeah.
So that was Dr. Van Quinsten couldn't see my face. Earl Quinsten, you know, my first American brothers. He said he couldn't. He said, I knew you, so I know if something would be funny, people will wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said about what my hobby was and how it creates social contacts and association and international goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one of the lectures. It's printed in the proceedings of
the conference.
Proceeding of the institute of
the conference. So I was wondering. I know that you are good lecturers and a lecturer, and so the students must like you a lot, even though you are non-American Caucasian professor. How did the Chinese first accept you, or you know they accept you?
You mean
later
the students
at UCLA?
UCLA. The first, that's already near the Pearl Harbor time, you see, September, October, November, December. After Pearl Harbor, the attitude was quite wonderful. And also Far Eastern studies were listed by the federal government as national service. You are not forced to take it, but that's a national survey. You take that with a special recognition. And also at that time, they began to have Navy V-12, all men. And then the general classes regarded also as national service, but they have a saying, men are scarce. Yes, mostly women. 100, 200 in one class, the third floor of Royce Hall, get out on the left, and quite a big class. And then I had readers to make the first grading. So the attitude were very good. And I can show you all the cards I have saved, 42, 43, 44, all the different sororities, invitation to us. We went there and autographed on many things from the sororities. So that shows the attitude was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I didn't notice much change after 44, 45, 46.
So that was good. And in the higher education institutes,
yes.
Mostly will have no problem with the students.
No, that's
true. Talking about students, I have a question about the early days when you came to United States and studied in Boston University as a foreign student. How were you treated as a foreign student?
Treated well. I would say treated well. This sounds a little self or conceited. You're well disciplined, trained. One class, a professor wrote something in Greek. So anyone, you're in ancient history of Greece, mm-hmm. you should know certain basic Greek words. And there one was a German Jew, Han, H-A-H-A-A-N,
mm-hmm.
Han, Wolfgang, Han, what is this? I don't know. And another also, he said, David Han was an American Jew. His name was H-A-H-N. My name, just simple, H-A-N. So I said, this is from Pythagoras and such and such. He said, well, the teacher was very pro me. He said, well, now here an Oriental can read the Greek, and here German, American couldn't. This is not a good picture for the West. So he was strong.
Oh, I see. So, yeah. At that time, were there many Chinese students?
Quite a few. Both, you see, we have a club. I have some pictures. Harvard, Radcliffe, and Boston University. Chinese, Greater Boston, we have meeting. One picture I still have, I think it must be 2025. Those who attended, there are a lot, they were working or they don't care this type of association. And I was well treated. And also this way, I have seen, and even today I think it's true. Any foreign student come in, want to make appointment to see a professor or dean or chairman, is much easier than average American to get in, to see them.
Why
that was that? True in Boston University and Harvard University, I know.
So they actually treat
the foreign students with a little extra consideration at Harvard University.
Most of these students, Chinese students, were from China, and as diplomats children's or...
Yes.
They already have very higher
education
and well-disciplined and... So
at that time,
English
there was not
good.
So much of temptation outside, except Germany. Germany, the inflation, Chinese had too much money. I mentioned this last time on our way from France, you know. Those who had money, not really rich, they could have several German girls and became such deteriorated individuals.
Mm-hmm. But in America, they work hard.
No,
and
not only that, the racial prejudice there. And a Chinese boy goes out with an American girl, very rare. And they look at you when I walk and going out to the restaurant and so on. People look with slanting eyes. Mm-hmm. They have slanting eyes to look at you.
Mm-hmm.
And they oppose, as I mentioned.
Uh-huh.
And when I went to see her, we were not married, and she has her apartment.
Uh-huh.
But the landlady was good. She's a man complained. He said, well, if you don't like it, you find another place. And they both are working hard and studying. What are you? So she was very good to us.
Uh-huh.
And also occasionally we took her to Chinatown to eat or cook a meal, sit in the very limited space, but cooking facilities and bathroom, and it was very good.
Uh-huh. So. Most of the Chinese students actually came out very successfully.
Yes, as a whole, they were more successful than the average people from other nationalities from the Far East.
Okay. So when you mentioned that you would go to Chinatown, you know, for dinner sometime.
Yes.
So this is New York Chinatown?
No, that's both. I had experience in both places, so Boston more. Yeah, Boston took a tram car and get near Chinatown. You walk to Harris Avenue and what is the other one? The elevated just passed by the Chinatown area, and
I
then
see.
The streetcars
down
yes
below.
Uh-huh. And then you go to the near the Boston Common, and you have the subway. To Harvard, to Cambridge.
So at that time, how did you find out all these Chinese in Chinatown? Did you feel that?
Well, they are 90% or more, 98% are Cantonese. And their English was limited, yet they know their ways and they are a group. And also, while I was in Boston, quite a few town war, different factions, the Guans and the Huangs or the...
So even in the 20s, still
oh, yes.
town
oh,
wars
yes.
going
this even I think even to the 1930s, mm-hmm. still this way, a struggle
for survival.
Basically economic reasons or control of certain position in the
community.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Did you actually associate with the Chinese in Chinatown?
No.
Besides going there shopping or
no.
eating?
Here in Los Angeles, some leading Chinese, like Barbara Wong's family,
uh-huh.
and the Cantonese, Y.C. Hong, an attorney for immigration. And
but over there in Boston or New York, when you were there as a student?
Well, I didn't want to. I didn't have the opportunity to associate there. I want to learn American way, American homes. I often advise Chinese students. I said, don't go to America and cornered with some Chinese family. You won't get the view of life, the way of life, and your language should not be just you go to a country, just cluttered together with your own people. But recently, there's that tendency going back again, the Shanghai together, Hong Kong again, Fujianese, another.
Yeah, but at that time, like, were there many Chinese students, you know, for example, from Boston University, going to Chinatown to work, like now, you know, like Gongdu?
No, I don't think so. I didn't
see
that. I know several students, they have other work which pays more. Let me see, some of the work serve in American restaurants, busboy or waiter. And
rather than going into
Chinatown. You see.
Uh-huh.
Especially those, even they are from the Yangtze Valley, Shanghai, Nanking, Hong Kong, they don't feel at home with the old Cantonese.
Uh-huh.
So they work on that better pay.
Uh-huh.
One time I worked 3 days, Dr. Leonard from Peking Union Medical College,
uh-huh.
He said, would you mind, I know you love nature and you talk about nature and the poetry. I have 5 acres of the maple type of tree. September, October, chilly, but it's still sunshine and beautiful. He said, I'll pay you 60 cents an hour. You can, at the end of the, any time you want to leave your note on a pile of wood, you just tie it there. I'll pay you
mm-hmm.
and next time. That's away from his home. This I had to take from streetcar to elevated and down to this Chestnut Hills.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there, I took coffee and food along, apple and so on. I sat there and wrote things about the scene
mm-hmm.
and my thought. And so I won't charge that. I suppose 9:30 I got there to 10:30 to 11, I sit down and rest a while. I write. And then work another hour, then 12:30 or so I ate my lunch.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a happy occasion. I enjoyed that.
So actually you work
that's all
sometimes.
That's the only time I worked, you may call manual labor. And he had tools, and I stored in a box where I could reach. At that time, no vandalism as today, and stealing unnecessary, just the wood. A certain size I piled here and there. Not more than 3 weeks, weekend, maybe Friday or Saturday mornings. Then evening I may go with some of the fellows who has a little church. You stay there, we'll feed you, and you give a lecture, we'll give you half the collection or something.
I see. So, you did work to support yourself through the
college. Yes, I did. All is my own work. You see, I think I mentioned it once, I taught in the extension in the evening.
Uh-huh.
not as good as Somersetshire. Somersetshire, the pay was much higher. The other one is extracurricular thing at the time, college exchange. I paid pretty good. I mean, I felt that was better than working on any other line. Even writing is takes too much time.
Yeah, were you very special at that time in terms of you know, job hunting? Like, were many of the Chinese students have the opportunity? Do they have the same opportunities that you had?
Well, mine is, I mean, confess this, you build up your association. One of the professors, and he liked me, I liked him, and for instance, certain things from China, I say, well, here's something unusual, so I gave to him. Mm-hmm. It's not bribery, it's you create a friendly relations. Then any opportunity, like this Professor Brightwin, he urged, he was chairman of the Department of Philosophy, he said, teach a history of Chinese thought. So that was one of the courses. And that summer, I like to teach my hobby, not my hobby, Chinese art, history of Chinese art, or an appreciation of Chinese paintings, or calligraphy and paintings.
Yeah, but the other Chinese students would not have that kind of
not
chance.
Too many.
Not
See,
many
I
of
was
them.
A graduate student, and some they became assistant at Harvard University. They have more money than Boston University, so a number of the teachers hired Chinese as a reader and correct things, or take care of the office, not by the secretary but by a Chinese student, and also. Collecting certain reports.
So whatever you earn, you put it for your education, or you actually save some money for your education?
Oh yes. When I left America, I have three times more than I went in.
Ah.
So I'm grateful to the United States for
Did
that's
very
one of the
well.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, come back to Los Angeles, because
yes,
I was just
talking
about student life, and I thought about your student life over there. But this, when you come in here, the student's life, I think, is a little different. You mentioned that in Boston, you have Chinese Students Association.
The Boston, yes.
Yeah.
Here, I think they have, during the war, now I recall, Albert Kwong and I were the speakers for intercollegiate Chinese, yes. The last one I went with him, together we were speakers, a big restaurant in Malibu. And I didn't know, wasn't familiar with the place yet. And he said, each one of you should study Chinese, not only English. Then you can operate in two continents. If you don't, you're Chinese, you will be embarrassed. They say, oh, you're from China, this. You can't even read your own name.
Mm-hmm. So did you encourage them that too?
Big one?
Did you encourage the students too?
Oh, yes. And this Xiao family, Dr. Xiao and Mrs. Xiao, they, I found they even they couldn't speak fully Cantonese. This Mooling. The third generation, Jennifer, Wesley graduate in Stanford degree, she couldn't talk Chinese, couldn't read Chinese. Oh, I was amazed. I said to myself, I couldn't say to the mother or the grandmother, no doubt that, say their chances of friends, you know, Marianne Lu's son, Peter, his MD intern in Columbia, and Jennifer, first I met Jennifer, he brought her here. And I offered to take them to Four Rivers. Oh, she said, no, my mother, we own the Mooling. Oh, I said, oh, that's good. So that started my part-time going there.
I see.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Wow. So most of the Chinese students here at that time actually very close to each other, USC, UCLA.
Yes.
And,
they're intercollegiate. Oh, they have dances together. They have discussions, debates, and outing to certain areas.
So you were often invited to give speeches.
Yes, at a lecture. And UCLA has its own Chinese student organization.
Mm-hmm. How many students at that time, Chinese students, well, around?
From 41 to 45, before the end of the World War, were limited. Mm-hmm. After the war, quite a number of Chinese, and they have this Chinese student group, and they have a publication, I forgot the name, I have the file. They publish their activities and certain things they did, and written, they put it in that.
Oh, that's
very good.
Yeah.
That's right. The Chinese student. Mm-hmm. Let me see, what did he do? I missed him. Later, he got his master's degree, and he taught in Azusa College. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Study also Oriental language or Oriental history?
Yes, language and history. And
uh-huh.
A smaller college would be cover everything.
Right.
See, UCLA, when I was
separate.
Appointed, there were only 10 teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And today, you know, history must be 80-some,
yeah.
The regular. Floating member, 79 or 80.
Right. Uh-huh.
So that's the situation. So the Chinese they are really prosperous. Every state university, you find one or two or three Chinese there.
Mm-hmm.
UCLA, economics, history, and political science, engineering especially, plenty.
Yeah, right.
So the same thing is true with the number of places where Chinese became professors and in these state universities.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some from University of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
They are not Wilmington, Domingo Hills or
mm-hmm.
something.
Mm-hmm.
Some are in Long Beach, some are in this Azusa. And,
so they did very well after they graduated from UCLA, and they
yes.
all got a
good job.
Good job
good
teaching
job.
At the
yes.
different colleges.
Yes, mm-hmm. they're very good.
The interview will be continued on June 17, 1981, and start with this side 2 of this tape.